Welcome to Now. Okay, pop quiz. How many politicians can you name who've been indicted for political corruption in the last few years? Well, Tom DeLay, Randy Duke Cunningham, William Jefferson come immediately to mind. It seems that nearly every time you open the paper, there is another scandal. One politician or another taking a wad of cash or a trip to a fancy resort in return for political favors. Tonight we take you to Alaska, where the FBI has been watching oil executives and the state's old boy network. It's turning out to be the next big political corruption story. Senior correspondent Maria Hinojosa and producer Kathleen Hughes take a look at just how big.
Juneau, the capital of Alaska, and the place where our story begins, right here inside the Baranoff Hotel, suite number 604. It's a nondescript hotel room, but this is a room with a view of the state legislature. And it was here, back in 2006, that the FBI hid a tiny camera and began documenting a tale of corruption that's as petty as it is profound.
But we have to produce.
Right now.
March 4th, 2006, 10:50 p.m. 70-year-old Bill Allen is meeting with his vice president, Rick Smith. Together, they run a multi-million-dollar oil services company called Vico. Bill Allen, that's him on the right, has got a foul mouth and, as you'll see in a minute, a wad of cash in his front pocket.
Right now, man, you have to produce.
What they're talking about producing is a tax package that would save the oil companies billions. And where they want to produce that is inside the state legislature. And now, thinking that no one is listening, they talk about how to make it happen.
You have to get dirty and you have to produce. I understand that.
Right here in this place.
Boozing it up here in Suite 604, Allen and Smith plan on getting down and dirty with state legislators. They'll be seen and heard bribing lawmakers to do their bidding. On this day, they're joined by the then Speaker of the State House of Alaska, Pete Cott. He's joking about his illegal quid pro quo.
I had to get it done, so I'd have to come back and face this man right here.
I had to cheat, steal, beg, borrow, and lie.
Well, that will stay in this room.
But it didn't stay in this room. This, along with hundreds of hours of audio and videotapes, ended up with the FBI. 1 year later, it's still not clear just how many officials sold their souls to the devil. But the unfolding scandal has already blown up the state's long-standing old boy network and threatens to bring down dozens of Alaska's politicos, both here and in Washington. I came here to try and get a sense of the magnitude of this story. My first stop, the Anchorage Daily News, Alaska's largest newspaper.
It's an earthquake, and we really don't at this point know the full dimensions of it.
Pat Doherty is editor-in-chief.
It is turning the established political power of the state inside out.
In the months since Bill Allen and his vice president pled guilty to conspiracy and fraud and then started cooperating with federal prosecutors, Doherty has had no fewer than five reporters covering the scandal full time. The reporters have covered two trials so far. After two convictions, this week it's trial number three inside the federal district courthouse in Anchorage. Vic Coring, a former Republican state representative, stands accused of taking bribes from Vico. The Daily News' Lisa Diemer is the courtroom reporter. At the end of the day's hearings, Diemer rushes back to the newsroom.
I'm just thinking about opening with a scene of what the juror saw today in the courtroom when they watched the video from Suite 604 and Vic Coring. Sometimes in these videos you can barely make the people out. He's there. He's front and center, and it's really an amazing video.
Let me help you on that little.
They open up their wallets and they hand him cash.
You can actually see cash being passed.
You can see, because it's black. Well, it's not. It's a little bit grainy video, but you see Bill's, and he thanks them. profusely.
Yeah. What can I do at this point to help you guys? Anything?
So I think about opening with that. Is that, I mean, because it seems like that's, in a sense, the heart of the case. Okay, great.
Okay,
great.
Good. Thanks. Okay.
In court, Deamer reported, Coring's defense attorneys tried to paint him as a little fish, a poorly paid representative who slept on his couch in the Capitol building. The paltry $2,600 he took in gifts sounds small until you realize how little he makes serving the public, less than $25,000 a year. While Coring didn't make off with a lot of cash, he did get his hand in the candy jar twice.
Delicious. Come on. Okay. I won't be shy here, for crying out loud. I'll take more of them.
This round of prosecutions is just the start, says Doherty of the Daily News.
How many more government officials here in the state of Alaska do you think could be tainted?
We're talking dozens, probably.
Dozens.
We're on our third trial.
Doherty wouldn't be surprised if the scandal reaches all the way to Washington, D.C. For reporters here, the FBI sting has begun to answer questions that they've been asking about Bill Allen and Vico for a long time. Reporter Rich Maurer has been on Bill Allen's trail for years.
Journalists don't get to tap phones. Journalists don't get to place secret cameras. So the FBI is listening in on conversations that we thought maybe were happening, but lo and behold, they really were, and we're getting to hear these things.
More than 20 years ago, in 1984, Maurer wrote a series of stories asking why a relatively unknown pipeline company called Vico was sending what turned out to be illegal campaign contributions to senators who would vote against a tax on oil.
At that point, it was a lot of money, $15,000 for five state senators, $12,000-$15,000.
After Maurer's original report, the State Elections Commission slapped Allen with a hefty penalty. But far from being deterred, Allen was on his way to becoming a big player in state politics.
The senator certainly knew who was responsible for giving them the checks, and that helped Bill Allen establish himself in politics as a political fundraiser. And that was my first story, and that was in August of 1984.
Yeah, so this was the Vico building. That corner up on the top there, that was the big Vico logo.
Allen's influence grew along with the companies. Before the scandal broke, Vico was the largest oil services operation in the state, with revenues worth about $1 billion a year. Its biggest clients, companies like Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips, paid Vico to build and repair the crucial pipelines that kept oil flowing. Vico's fortunes rose and fell with the oil industry, and Allen made it his business to keep legislators in Juneau working on Big Oil's behalf. Over the years, Vico became the biggest donor to the state's dominant party, the Republicans.
I mean, Vico has been a money machine for the Republican Party in Alaska for 20-something years. So the Republican candidates for office could start their campaigns, as long as they were acceptable to Vico, with guarantees of tens of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions and support.
Allen demanded loyalty, and his willingness to twist arms is legendary. Andrew Halcrow was a Republican state representative from 1999 to 2003. Shortly after his election, he says he got an unexpected phone call from Allen.
He said, "I want you to support Pete Cott for speaker." And I said, "You know, I'm sorry, I've already made up my mind." And he said, "Well, you know, we held a fundraiser for you, and we raised money for you, and I've donated lots of money to the Republican Party." And I was shocked.
Halcrow says Bill Allen kept a tight leash on the legislative process, often spending more time in the Capitol than the state legislators did.
They were spending basically 12, 13 hours a day in the Capitol. And I would come to work at 8 a.m. and they'd be there. I'd leave the Capitol at 6 p.m. They'd be there. And what happened was everybody in the Capitol realized that they were breaking the law, because the state lobbying laws say that you cannot lobby more than 10 hours in a month. And these guys were lobbying 10 hours in a day.
So Hal Crow and several others filed a complaint.
And what they did the very next year was they went back and they had the legislature change the law to allow them to do that.
It seems Allen and his cronies even took a perverse pleasure in their power to sway the law. Vico paid $900 to have baseball caps embroidered with the initials CBC. A little inside joke among legislators and Bill Allen. It stood for the Corrupt Bastards Club. Now, this may all sound like small-town dirty politics, but Allen's reach stretched all the way to Washington, D.C. Take a look at these pictures. It's the late 1990s. Here's Bill Allen on a fishing trip in Alaska with some of Washington's then most powerful Republicans, Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott, House Speaker Dennis Hastert, Senators Phil Graham, Thad Cochran, and yes, Larry Craig. What did the vacationers have in common? All of them spent time with Vico Chief Bill Allen, and all are close political allies of Alaska Senator Ted Stevens. You can't really talk about Bill Allen without talking about his relationship with Ted Stevens, Alaska's most powerful political figure in Washington. Ted Stevens is the longest sitting Republican in the U.S. Senate. He's been there almost 40 years. The man who brings home the proverbial bacon, Alaskans have even come to call him Uncle Ted.
He certainly is responsible for lots of things that take place here, whether it's federal funds to build airports, roads, tunnels, bridges, bridges to nowhere, bridges to somewhere.
He has really become like a godfather who is able to go in and say, I want some money for these people in Alaska, and I want some money for these people in Alaska. And it's a lot of money. I mean, it's more money than we can tally. It's so much money you can't keep track of it.
It would only make sense that Alaska's most powerful Republican and the biggest donor to his party would have a close relationship. Ted Stevens and Bill Allen go way back. At one point, along with a group of investors, they even bought a $40,000 thoroughbred racehorse named So Long Birdie. Over the years, Vico contributed hundreds of thousands of dollars to Stevens' political allies. In recent years, Vico has been the recipient of more than $150 million worth of federal contracts. Still, last summer, even seasoned Daily News reporters were stunned when the FBI did what was once unthinkable. They descended on the senator's home in Alaska and raided it.
I mean, this is the first time the FBI has raided a sitting U.S. senator's home.
The FBI, Maher reported, suspects that Vico and Bill Allen paid to expand the senator's home.
It was originally a one-story house that they jacked up and inserted another first story underneath the second story. So basically doubled the size of the house.
Oh, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
So far, Senator Stevens has not been charged with anything, but questions about his relationship with Bill Allen, the man who is now talking to the FBI, follow him everywhere. Stevens maintains his innocence, and his office has not responded to our requests for an interview. The senator has also maintained his silence about his 48-year-old son, Ben Stevens, who until last year was president of the Alaskan State Senate. Like his father, he's not been charged. But while Ben Stevens was serving in the Alaskan Senate, Vico was actually paying him what they called consulting fees, $50,000 a year, almost $250,000 in total. In fact, Ben Stevens' name comes up frequently on the FBI's tapes from room 604.
And you better figure it out, because Ben's got an agenda, and Ben does not keep him informed like he should, okay? Listen, I think the world of mother, little mother, okay? I love him, okay? Smart, genius, all that, da-da-da-da.
Ben Stevens never shows up on the tapes, but from the way they speak of him, it sounds like he's a member of the Corrupt Bastards Club.
I was talking to him about, you know, well, we got to get this mother thing done. How are we going to do it? What did Ben say?
If he has to, he'll put another conference.
Here's Ben Stevens. He's being paid $250,000 by Vico as a consultant. What's he doing for that money? You know, unlike his father, Ben Stevens has really done virtually nothing for the state of Alaska.
Bill Allen has testified for the prosecution in the federal corruption trials. It was during the second one that he dropped the bomb about Ben Stevens.
What Bill Allen has said on the witness stand was that I paid Ben Stevens essentially to be a state senator and work for me as a state senator. And that's a potential crime under state law, a potential crime under federal law.
And as a reporter, when you hear that?
I say, there you go. Let's get that in the paper.
The political scandal rocking Alaska has done something that was inconceivable just a couple of years ago. It has unhinged the state's old boy network and opened the door for reformers.
The governor of the state of Alaska, Sarah Palin.
Into the breach, an unexpected figure, Sarah Palin, Alaska's new governor.
Good morning, Central Huskies!
The former beauty queen, small town mayor, and mother of four is a conservative Republican who ran for office last year and won, promising to clean up corruption in her own party. Before the elections, Palin was considered a long shot, but her plain-spoken style and willingness to be tough on the oil industry has made her wildly popular here. With the Vico case constantly in the headlines, Palin has already forced sweeping ethics reforms on the legislature in Juneau.
She has a real instinct for politics, and she comes in at a time when almost the entire rest of the political culture is discredited. And, you know, she doesn't speak to the chairman of the Republican Party because she turned him in for ethics violations when they both served on the state commission that regulates the oil industry.
This past October, Palin proved she means business. She called lawmakers back to Juneau for a special session. She demanded they vote for the tax increase on big oil that they failed to pass while Bill Allen was handing out bribes in Suite 604. We caught up with Palin as the session was getting underway. Her proposal? Increase the oil profits tax rate about 2.5%. It doesn't sound like much, but with oil selling at more than $90 a barrel, it adds up to more than $1.5 billion a year.
This is a big darn deal for Alaska. That non-renewable resource, of course, is so valuable. It's being sold for us at a premium by Exxon, BP, ConocoPhillips. And, of course, they're fighting us every step of the way when we say, well, we want to make sure, especially as it's being sold for a premium, that we're receiving appropriate value.
Now, make no mistake. Like most Alaskans, Palin is not anti-oil. The industry accounts for more than 85% of the state's tax revenues. Thanks to oil, Alaskans pay no income or sales tax. Instead, they get money from the oil companies. Every year, every single resident gets a check from oil industry royalties just for living here.
In a state like Alaska, can you in fact really take on the power of the oil companies?
The oil companies don't own the resources. They have leases and the right to develop our resources for us, and we share value. We're partners there because they do the producing for us, but we own the resources.
Palin gave legislators 30 days to debate her tax proposal. During committee hearings, Palin's opponents argued that higher taxes may ultimately force big oil to cut back on investments in Alaska, especially as some of the oil fields here are beginning to get tapped out. Democrats like Representative Les Guerra from Anchorage aren't buying the industry's argument.
Their bluff every single day is that if you tax and get your fair share for the people of the state of Alaska, we'll just leave the state, as oil companies will go somewhere else. We know that's a bluff.
If they are bluffing, the Vico scandal has, for the first time in decades, given lawmakers like Guerra the political capital to call them on it. Bill Allen and his men may be gone, Guerra says, but the oil industry still wields a lot of power in these halls. And, Guerra says, big oil still has questions to answer about the Vico scandal. He pointed to this phone call taped by the FBI between Bill Allen and the president of Alaska ConocoPhillips, Jim Bowles.
We want to just see if we can't stop this thing, don't we?
The two oil executives are talking about stopping last year's tax bill.
If there's any way we could get this thing stopped, that's the best possible outcome.
Okay, well, I got work, and it's just between me and you, but I got a Peacock and Jim, I mean Ben doing it, and hopefully they're going to try.
At the time of this recording, Pete Cott was the Speaker of the Alaskan House, and Ben Stevens was the President of the Senate.
Maybe they can't get it done, but they think that they told me they thought they could.
Okay, well, that's good news. Bill, I tell you what, I think if we can get this killed this time, we can come back and package up something that works better for the governor and for ourselves.
That makes you ask the question, what did the folks at Conoco know? What did the folks at Bill Allen tell them about this little scheme they had to defraud the Alaska public?
Guerra and fellow Democrat Senator Hollis French recently wrote this letter to all three of the state's big oil companies demanding that they come clean about their relations with VECO.
It's a question, and it's a fair question, and as I said before, it's a question in the minds of tens of thousands of Alaskans.
All three oil companies have denied knowing about VECO's illegal activities. ConocoPhillips wrote back to the lawmakers saying there is no indication that ConocoPhillips was involved in or had any knowledge of the illegal acts. But ultimately, Bill Allen may have cost the oil industry billions. Late last week, Governor Palin got what she wanted. The special session ended with legislators voting to increase the tax rate on big oil. Back in the newsroom, the Anchorage Daily News reporters consider the fallout.
Can you ever have a situation where Alaska politics can be independent from the oil industry?
I would say history suggests not, because I don't think that there has been a time in which the state was not really being pushed around by the oil industry.
VECO has now disappeared, bought up by a multinational conglomerate, but the scandal isn't going away.
Are we at the beginning of this story or at the end?
I think we're closer to the beginning than we are to the end.